All right, I don't have a fancy gavel, but I will call us to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this, the second day of October. Before we get started, just want to let everybody know that, Wayne's sister passed away a couple days ago. It was not unexpected, but still a tough time for the family. So he's in St. Louis with his family taking care of arrangements, and I'm sure you'll all join us in sending your thoughts and prayers to the entire family. With that, we start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Please join us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Joe. Public comment number one, this is comment period for the public to address topics that are on today's agenda. I don't have any requests to speak, but is there anybody who would like to speak to anything? Seeing no one jumping up and moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes from the September 25th meeting.
Move approval.
And I'll second it. Any comments or corrections? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
And I'll second. Further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Consent agenda. Number six already, baby. Let's go.
I'll move approval.
I should note that there are additions of road closures, 1329, 1330, and 1331.
I'll amend my motion and add the changes.
And I'll second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items, none. Additional items. Oh, something new. Consideration of the final draft of the economic development process and policy. Me and Jessica had another meeting today, asked if she needed to be here. I said no. I thought we could handle it. I talked to Arden Griner this morning. He continues to want the policy strengthened, but I think he and I came to an understanding that if the policy were to pass today, it doesn't mean that we can't go back and strengthen or weaken what is in there. We made the changes, Paul, that you suggested last week, I think strengthening and clarifying how we're going to notify and who we're going to notify. And then I will say that personally I made one further commitment that I will call Arden Griner anytime we start to consider a TIF project, just so that he's abundantly aware of it, and since he has taken the most active role. I know Loris has spoken to this in the past, so Loris, I'd offer you the opportunity to speak again if you want, if anybody else wants to speak. Otherwise, there's no changes other than what you suggested last week, and so I'd like to see us go ahead and move forward.
I'll just say that I think it's a good policy and it's a good place to start. And I'm going to move approval of the policy as it's presented here today.
And I'll second. Further conversation. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes. Discussion and acknowledge receipt of proposals for Story County Employee Benefit Insurance Broker Consultant. This is something Melissa's been working on for. This is on your desk the first week we hired you, wasn't it?
Yep. Okay. The purpose today is all I'm going to do is open them and make it a public record of who submitted proposals, and then we will meet with a committee that will go over them and come back to the board with a recommendation, whether we need to bring the agents in to do a little presentation at that point. I'm guessing it'll be about 2 weeks from today when we come back, if I can get everybody together. Trying to get all the schedules to work out is.
And remind me who's on that committee.
We have the list here. I tried to get as many union people as possible. I'm still waiting to hear if Secondary Roads is going to put a union member on there. We have Lisa Markley from the Auditor's Office. We have Brent Balda from the County Assessor. Brett McLean has expressed interest but will not be available till after that Freedom Flight. He's quite busy with that. I have Darren Moon Pam Breer from CLP, Paula Haberman from IT. The attorney's office actually had three. I'm trying to narrow it down to two people so we don't have three people from the same office. Sheriff's office, I have Nancy Denikis. And then supervisor would be Paul and myself. So there's about 12, which is a good size committee, I feel.
And then just so I'm clear on the process, this committee will take a look at it and come with a recommendation to the full board?
Correct.
Okay.
So it looks like we have three proposals that came in. The first one is from Wells Fargo Insurance Services. Tracy Hitchcock is the agent for that one. They're sealed pretty well. The second one is from Nicole Engelhart, ACT Insurance Agency, and Janelle Bell Group Benefits, LTD. And these are all the same. Looks like he just put them in three different envelopes. And the third one is from Benefit Source. That would be Dick Clem out of Ames. So those are the three that gave us proposals. Benefit Source, Inc.
So okay.
I will hopefully be back in 2 weeks.
All right. Anything else we need to cover today for process?
I don't think so. Once we get this in place, then we can move forward with actually getting bids and everything.
Paul, thanks for serving on that committee, taking that on. Sounds like a barrel of monkeys.
I can thank Wayne for, I think he. All right.
Thanks, Alyssa. No agency reports, departmental reports, environmental health. Margaret?
Is this exactly the same as you're going to do this afternoon for the Board of Health?
Just about, yeah. Do you have a problem? I'm not going to write two. Good morning.
How are you?
I'll start off with septic permits. We're quite a bit ahead of last year, actually. 52 permits have been issued for septic systems, new ones. 48 total for 2011, so we're ahead. Repairs, about the same. And inspections, those are time of transfer inspections that we track. Some of the biggies that we've been working on as far as septic systems go, the E-Free complex up on George Washington Carver, they are putting in three 100-foot mounds, very complicated. We're working with an engineering firm and as well as the church, and it's taken a considerable amount of field time out there keeping track of what's going on.
You remind me, what did they build originally, and how did all that happen?
Yes, they originally built a small mound that was up close to the church. It has failed. I refer to it as a chocolate fountain. Very bad. And then with all the kids and activity out there, just very, very bad. It was undersized. I guess they underestimated the water use. It was sized more for like a three-bedroom house. And so now we've gone from like a 40-foot square mound to this. So quite a difference. This one will not fail. speaking of failing, we do have two failing mounds that we're working with right now in the county. The one on the right, I think we're just going to up and have to replace that one with a media filter system. The one on the left, I think it was an undersized system. I just found that last week, and so we're working with the homeowner to get that squared away. Another one that's taking a considerable amount of time is the golf course down on south of Ames on 69 there. It's really been cool to watch going in. The steel thing on top left there, that's where they're going to shoot their or hit their balls from in the winter time, so they can practice.
Yeah, putting green is going to be in
green,
there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not a golfer. This one required a sand filter because they went and stripped all the original soil off the ground, so we're stuck with a filtering system. Top right looks like a submarine. It's not. It's a sampling port for that. So the controversy with this is that where all the stars are, those are all discharging systems, so sand filters that discharge, that lands up eventually going to the pond there. That is about a 4.5-acre pond that you're looking at, and so it receives water from, there's a little stream that runs to it, discharge from the houses, and then runoff. Is what sources that pond there. So the issue is whether or not they need to disinfect that water, because the pond water is being pumped, bottom left, the pond water is being pumped, and then the golf course is being irrigated with water that's mixed with effluent discharge. About half of the states in the United States require disinfection before you irrigate land with that. Iowa is not one of those states, but EPA recommends a disinfection of that water before it's irrigated. So something like an ultraviolet light, chlorination, ozone, something like that. So I'm working with the university and the property owner to come up with a good solution on this. So far, not a lot of good ideas.
But where are they coming down right now? Do they feel like they since they're allowed in Iowa, they should just be able to water with
Yeah,
it?
They're just they're already irrigating right. Like crazy. The pond has gone down 3 feet. I guess it wasn't even on their radar, to be honest, and they were quite surprised when I brought this up. It's tough because they pump a lot, and it's hard to, you know, stream chlorine in there. It's hard to, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, but it's really something that needs to be considered. If you think about it, golfing, unless you're doing hole in ones every darn time, you're touching the grass every time you pick up a ball, you know, and so there could be pathogens in that water.
Well, but now this is a driving range, not a golf course. I mean, this is not a golf. It's a practice facility.
Well, so, true, but I still think you're going to be touching the grass and being in contact with it. I do. You know, they're going to come out of that thing, and they're going to be on the course, right?
Well,
or
they
not.
Will be hitting balls out on into the, they'll be hitting from grass. There's no question about it. And they'll be hitting balls out onto the grassy areas.
Okay,
but it's set up strictly as a practice facility for the Iowa State golf team.
Right.
I don't know that this has anything to do with whether we should require more stringent guidelines than I think the state does. My question to you would be, how are we going to enforce that? If the state of Iowa doesn't require it, if the property owner and the university say, no, the state doesn't require it, we're not doing it, how do we step in as a county and enforce that?
Well, I guess I would at very least have documentation saying, hey, it's a really good idea to do this. If mm-hmm. if the whole team comes down with sure. Giardia, you know, hey.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, we are public health. We're here to try to, you know, plant the seed of public health.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm with you. I just want to understand what our authority is.
Yes, no authority at this point.
No.
Well, permits, 21 to date, 28 in 2011. Plugging, seems like we're behind in that a little bit. I don't know why. Let's see, well, rehabs, we're behind. Water testing, we're ahead, and well inspections, we're ahead. So well inspections, again, are for time of transfers. Permits, I want to wonder if maybe because the housing is slowing down some, the geothermal wells are not as active. Most of the water wells that you see there are animal confinement wells. The picture on the left, this is our fun picture of this quarter. It's a refrigerator over top of a frost pit. So, that's just a really good use of a refrigerator to protect their well, you know. So I just thought it was very clever.
Margaret, I got a question in correlation. So septic numbers are up.
Uh-huh.
But wells are down.
Are down.
Well, it seems to me those two should go up and down together.
Yeah. Yes and no. Some of them, septic or retrofits also sometimes.
Yeah.
And then the geothermal can be retrofit. I think they're just, people are backing off of the geothermal for some reason. I don't know why, but a lot of the new builders, they're just not pushing them like they were. I think there's still the tax incentive, correct?
I don't know that.
I believe there is. So
I think there is.
Yeah, but I don't know why.
Okay.
But, yeah, good observation. No answer. Lead inspection program, I still have 9 open cases, 2 of them that I'm watching closely because they have the children residing there. Both cases are in Nevada. One is brand new, so I haven't done the initial investigation yet. And then another one is they won't answer their calls. I've worked with Jessica. I've issued another notice of violation. Just not getting any response at all.
What happens ultimately if we don't get a response?
I don't know. this is a tough case. You know, it's a rental situation, so they won't answer their door. They won't answer their phone, same as the owner. We will issue the notice of violation, and then Jessica might bring them to court if she's got the time. I've met with her on this. We've discussed it. We're just taking it step by step. My previous step was to go in and re-inspect. They won't let me in the door. Okay. So now I've issued another notice of violation. Wait a week, and then we'll see. Might have to go to court. I don't know.
Have we sent them information on the damage that lead poisoning can do to the children?
Oh, yes. Complaints, bed bugs in a local hotel, raw sewage discharge in Fernald, discharge pipe for Vantex Lateral, that's an easy one. Crestview, constant complaints on that. That's a mobile home park just west of Ames, but not in the city of Ames. And then complaints regarding the E-free plex that I talked about earlier, and that is water quality issues on our part, and then the noise issue I think was referred over to planning and development. Trainings and meetings, interagency reviews, public health emergency preparedness with Homeward, I worked on that, local emergency planning committee. I did have the opportunity to go to EPA's animal feeding operation presentation in Arcadia. That's in response to people's complaints for them doing flyovers on the CAFOs. And then also the Iowa Veterinarians Rapid Response Team, and we did a tabletop for foot and mouth disease, so agricultural type emergency and how to respond to that. Miscellaneous 200 hookup rule and down in Huxley. This is where you're getting the clash of city country folk. They don't want to hook up to city because the city would have control over what kind of animals they have. but yet if they're within 200 feet, they're required to hook up to city sewer. So the clash is there, and we still haven't decided what to do with these folks moving in next to Huxley there. I reissued several notice of violations for folks not getting their septic system in a timely manner. Codification, working on, you know, the county-wide codification. I've done the wells. Kathy's working on nuisance. I have to do septics yet. We've been covering half of Boone County. I've done four site reviews, two final inspections, one water test. There was a driller violation. A driller went in there without a permit, and then he got the well too close to the septic. So that's been a time consumer. And then they also have a 200-foot hookup clash city and county.
Tell me about the 200-foot hookup in both Huxley and Boone. I'm, you know, it's not really my purview, but in Huxley, who is that required by? If they're within 200 feet.
State and county require.
Say that if you're within 200 feet, you have to hook onto the sewer system. Once you hook onto the sewer system, then the city has some say over what animals you keep?
Well, the city almost always requires that a property annex, and then you're under their regulations. And then most cities, towns have, you know, what types of animals. So horses, chickens, you know, things like that. I know Boone does, although they're thinking about writing a variance or a conditional use permit for this fellow with horses. And then Huxley, I'm not sure that I've let the homeowner battle that. He's been going to a lot of council meetings and that, and then just keeping me informed on what's going on. So, you know, I can see it both ways, but the law is the law, and maybe they should, you know, a little further out.
Well, but I guess what I'm wondering is if I've got a house and Huxley's growing, and Huxley grows to me, and all of a sudden I'm within 200 feet, now I'm forced to hook on to the sewer system.
It's up to the administrative authority, okay?
Okay.
So the way we've been doing it is that no new septic systems or no new replacement systems are if you are within 200 feet.
Okay.
So if the city grows to you, we are not making you hook up and eliminate your system until you have problems, okay? This is a case where he bought the property, put the cart before the horse, bought the property, and now is learning of all these problems.
That's kind of what we did here in Nevada with the Milams, just west of town. They'd put in fairly recently put in a new system. Mm-hmm. And I think the city told them that, you know, you can stay on your own system until it fails. And then, you know, we won't allow you to put a new system in, you'll have to hook on the sewer. So, and I think that's what we've done.
And I think that's a good policy. I really do.
Especially if you couple it with some kind of ability to get a variance to continue to do what you've been doing. So, okay. Thanks.
And then coming up, budget, if you can even believe it. Ugh.
Sharpen your pencil.
Not you, though.
you better watch.
And then... IEHA conference over in Marshalltown, and then we're having a health fair booth. And that's all that's on our plate for the next quarter, along with all the other stuff. Any questions or comments?
Is Boone, how much of your time is Boone taken? What you expected or more than you expected?
More, to be honest, yeah. Yep.
And are we getting compensated for all the time you're spending?
Yes.
Don't they have somebody? Didn't you tell me they were interviewing somebody or they had somebody interested?
Yeah, they're really close, and then so it's just a matter of them, you know, the two weeks to 4 weeks crossover deal, and then they'll be done. Yeah.
Their department's just one employee.
One person, yeah. Yep.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Good report. Mm-hmm. All right, next on the agenda, planning and development, Leanne. Hello, Ann.
You all have a copy of this as well, in black and white, in front of you. Can I just go over what's been happening since really kind of the basically May, I think, was the last time I was officially up here giving a report, May or June. From the standpoint of current and long-range planning, we're continuing to focus on local food systems planning. Earlier this summer, we brought a number of changes before you that to the strategic plan that you did approve. Staff has to finish the actual physical revisions to that plan and then get posted online. But on three specific solution strategies, we're making a lot of progress. One is 3.1, and that's the one dealing with public leasing of or leasing of public land for local food and farm production. We've finalized the review of what tillable land is available under county ownership and scheduled to present this to the Story County Conservation Board in October. We're hoping to bring it to the commission in November, but we won't be having a commission meeting, so we'll probably be December and then to you all after that. So there'll be some time to really vet out what that means, what some strategies may include, what may not be included. I'm looking forward to the Conservation Board meeting to really start a good solid rapport with them. And then 3.2 is looking at possible the comprehensive review of assessment of what we have in place, and then looking at some possible tax incentive programs. That's currently underway, and that will be coming to you for some discussion in November. What other counties have done, what applicability those may or may not have in Story County, and then some recommendations.
We move back to 3.1, so it goes to three different entities. It goes to conservation, then it goes to
Planning and Zoning Commission.
Commission, and then finally to us. Can it get derailed at each of those three stops? What ultimately?
Ultimately, it's you all that have a say if we do anything with it. The reason we're going to the Conservation Board, a lot of the lands are managed by Story County Conservation Board, and the reason we're taken to Planning and Zoning Commission is simply they are involved in long-range planning. It's for information purposes to really get some feedback as to how viable a program this may or may not be, and you know what track is too small, what track is too large, what areas are hands off to even look at. They may be tillable now, but in the long term plan is to have them become prairie, and so do we even look at any conversion of that. So we don't necessarily have to take it to all the other two entities other than you. It can come right to you, but we think it's probably in the best interest if we want to develop a solid program. And that's if, indeed, we do develop a program. This is the background for it.
And how many acres of tillable land have you guys identified?
I'll have to give that to you. I don't have it. Yeah, I don't have it off the top of my head. Actually, I think I might.
Not off the top of my head.
I think this could be an important program. I mean, I'm interested to see where ultimately we end up.
There are 146 parcels that are county owned. And when we looked at the average site value, which is a term we use to look at the viability for continued ag, that takes it down to 102 properties. Of that, those that were determined feasible based on amount of vacant land, it's a bunch of criteria, brought down to 37 properties. Those with favorable soils and areas, I think, were at 2,700 acres, but when we took in all the other criteria, it took it to just over 1,000 acres. So a considerable amount of acreage.
Yeah.
A very large number of acres.
And just so I'm clear as we start this conversation, and I know it's got two stops to make before it comes back to us, we're not talking about leasing this land to existing big farm operations, or are we?
No. Well, no. I'm going to say no. Initially, the way it's conceptualized that this would be to beginning farmers, or at least to maybe a cooperative of beginning farmers or entities that want to get specifically into local food production. And honestly, a lot of these properties are already cash rented out and to a conventional farmer, and it may be amending that model too and diverting from that standard policy the county has done for managing that land to a different model.
Okay, so right now, a lot of this property we're leasing, or conservation is leasing to farmers, collecting the rent payment off.
Right.
Okay.
And that model would continue. It would still be a value driven from that land through some sort of a lease arrangement. But the lease lease E would be a different breed than the conventional farmer. And that's all that that's why I feel it's important we have the dialogue at the commission level as well as the conservation board, too, to see ultimately what does that end product look like so that when we bring it forward to you as a policy document and for some direction, we've started vetting out some of those questions.
Thank you.
Continuing on, solution strategy 5.1. Rick, I have to, this is a good old Rufus Wig. every time I see it, say that, I think of you.
Yep.
That's
been years ago that you and I started. I liked all of Leanne's acronyms, and Rufus Wig is one of my favorites.
And this is not one I made up, but it's a fun one to say. I feel like I'm swearing when I say it. This is 5.1, and this is looking at different models for distribution and related facilities for local food production. You directed staff to place this strategy on hold until a decision was reached regarding Central Iowa Rufus Wig. That would be Hardin, Boone, and Story County. If you look in that map up there, I know it's blurry, but you can at least see the red in Central Iowa jump out at you. Prairie Rivers of Iowa and Iowa State Extension put forth a grant application to establish this. It was awarded, and so this is officially, we are now, Story County is part of a Rufus Wig, and Penny Brown Huber has asked that I attend one of their pre-planning meetings in November to see what the how this is modeled, how this goes forth. So this is still on hold, and we'll revisit with that conversation with her. Connect Iowa, our next meeting is October 16th. I have to say we're a little bit disappointed at staff level. Our ability to collect the data has been really slow and rather cumbersome. Charlie said 25% of the data that's been collected thus far has been from meeting attendees. And so reaching out to beyond those meeting attendees and receiving information back has been kind of difficult. So at the October 16th meeting, hopefully we'll get some additional direction and get some more meeting and then really start to ramp that up. I would personally like to see that finalized by the end of this calendar year, but now when we're dealing with some third, fourth, fifth, on out to 20th parties, that will definitely be out of our control. Current long-range planning continued, the CPAT report. One thing on this, we do need to schedule a work session with you all. The format to be determined, this is based on last one we brought forth to you a few months ago. I'll look for probably now early November on that and how we deal with that. I have access to your calendar, so I'll figure that one out, or maybe even late October. But we are making progress on some of the recommendations. Coming forth to you in November are changes for our small wind. This was a recommendation from the CPAT report and solar regulations. So the city services questionnaire should be back to you probably by the end of this month. That's kind of been low on my plate. When I have things cleared out, I bring that back up and finish it up. You obviously took steps on the TIF process today, and I just spoke about our local food strategies. There are still some other issues in there that staff would like some direction from you all as the policymakers for Story County, whether or not we should be putting our resources towards those. So that's why the work session is still pretty important.
I'm fully behind the idea of a work session. I believe, as I recall the CPAT conversation, and Paul, I'd ask you to correct me if I'm wrong, what we committed to was, same with the CPAT report that we committed to with the restructuring committee report, and that was all the items that have budgetary implications, we were going to deal with them as part of the next budgetary cycle. And so, to me, it's important that we have a work session to bring this back to the forefront before we start discussing the budget so that we can make decisions as we build that FY14 budget. Second thing I would ask, and I don't know if it fits right here or not, but as we finished the initial approval of our TIF process and policy document, I think it's important that we start identifying the new wind energy towers. I think there's six that have come online or are in the process of coming online, and I think we need to have, and probably through you, have a conversation about whether those are added to the urban renewal plan and become part of that TIF.
That conversation should be occurring the next week or two then, too, with the December 1st deadline looming very close.
Except I'm not convinced that they are, with the way the assessor's office lags a year behind, I'm not convinced anything's coming online in the next calendar year anyway, but we need to identify all that.
I'll get the information. I did work with Dave Swanson and Wayne Schrickrath to identify those parcels and know what the taxable values are, and I can get when they do come online for you.
Thank you.
Continuing on, City of Ames Flood Mitigation Study. I'm not going to even try to really explain this graphic. This was developed by Ames and the consultants. It's just a visual depiction of the public input process. And you see the three funnels from the green lines. Those are the three opportunities that are for public input leading to city council workshops. Tonight, actually, is the first public session. It's an open house format. And then tomorrow night, the same. And then Wednesday, the 10th, and Thursday, the 11th, we switched to an open mic format. I'm not able to staff this tonight, nor will I be able to staff tomorrow afternoon, but I might have some opportunity to be there for the open mic next week. But I will keep you up to date. The City of Ames has developed a website, or the consultants has, for this, and they intend to, as public comment is received, have it posted on there as soon as possible. And so I will send that link. Development review. First of all, I want to thank Aaron Borton with Facilities Management. On the right side is our new development proposed sign, our development proposal sign. He took our existing green signs and modified them so they're smaller in size. They fit nicely into the RAV, which is a concern I had, and I can physically handle them given my height. And then we had the new inside signs done by First Class Signs, Margaret? Yeah. In Ames. And so we have four of these. I think Health has two of them for their purposes. And we actually have two up right now at the Oaks Golf Course. And for our current development review cases, we do have the Oaks redevelopment. It's the rezoning subdivision plat. That will be coming to you in November. The rezoning first, and then on the third consideration, the subdivision. Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval last evening. Next week, you'll have our second residential parcel subdivision, which is known as a FRI. This will go on your consent agenda from this point on, unless there's something controversial, we'll do in that manner. Next week as well, you'll have proposed amendments to land development regulations. This deals with the mass storage of agricultural materials. This is specifically to address those very, very, very large piles of hay bales that are necessary for the new plant to come on, that DuPont plant. So these are processed through a conditional use permit.
And so right now we don't have the ability for Dinesco to store what they need to store.
No. Well, can you explain that a little bit? Because I've heard a couple of different versions of what they're looking at doing. I mean, if they simply rent farm ground and store those on farm ground, does that run afoul of?
Yes, they'll have to have a conditional use permit to do that.
Okay.
Unless that is being used right for the farm ground for that operation right there. If it's being used for DuPont, it's going to need a conditional use permit, and we'll have to know the end user.
And have you been in contact with anybody from DuPont to make them aware of that?
I don't know that. I have not. I don't know if Charlie has. I can verify that.
And I'm sure if LaVon Schiltz would be a good contact person. I think they have most of their management staff in place. So
we've actually been working with a contractor. I don't know if they've been hired by DuPont or a firm out of Ames that works on location and site plans for these types of uses. That's been our primary contact, rather than directly with DuPont. But we can follow up with them. Next, also coming to you are the proposed amendments to land development regulations for small wind and solar. Those were acted on last night by the Planning and Zoning Commission, recommended approval with one minor change. And then we do not have an October Board of Adjustment meeting this week, and as of just a few minutes ago, we don't have a November Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. So hopefully that will work out, and December won't be entirely packed. Just a quick snapshot of where caseload has been from 1999. And I did this just for my benefit, looking ahead towards the budget and trying to play target or whatever game you want to say, trying to predict some of our permit values and subdivision values. But I just want to highlight a few things on this. Definitely 2002 was our record year for caseload. This is everything from county development plan amendments, rezonings, ordinance amendments, subdivisions, you name it, that go ultimately to the Board of Adjustment or Board of Supervisors for decision. The anomaly in that year, though, was we had 15 ordinance amendments. And if you look at the time frame, that is what really kicked us into gear to revise and go from a standard zoning ordinance and standard subdivision regulations to our combined ordinance. And that's the point where we had every other week we're bringing changes together because it was a flawed document. And the changes you've seen since then have been either the annual cleanups, where we're correcting grammatical errors or really trying to enhance it, like with the solar and the small wind turbine ordinance. Year to date, we're at 20 cases. Annual caseload on average is about 30. So, you know, really, we're right there on target. Permit review. Also, with the packet, you had three sheets of paper. You see the same table then for 2011 and 2010. I just didn't want to include it on here. What I want to just direct everyone towards is that bottom line that's in yellow, and that's the totals where we are for this year. We're at 161 total applications have been submitted this year thus far. That is extremely high. One is that we've started requiring zoning permits for all floodplain work, too. And so you see that floodplain miscellaneous of 29. The fees are not required in that case, but that is, even at that, we're still at about 140, 130 permits. And it's still really high from where we've been. So far this year, we've issued one PDP for a new house and then actually 16 final zoning permits. That number 90 zoning permits, that will correlate to the number of inspections we've done this calendar year as well, too. I do want to note that, too. This is calendar year basis. We don't keep our permit data on a fiscal year basis. I think it'd be maybe worthwhile to transition to that, but it'd be very labor-intensive. Just in comparison, then, for 2011, 2012, and 2011, we issued 98 permits. It was higher valuation last year, though. That's because we had wind turbines and Vetter come online. Vetter was 2010 then. And then in 2010, we issued 115 permits. So the trend has been kind of up and down, not a clear trend, but we are definitely staying around that 100 mark. Then that got me thinking yesterday about what kind of single-family dwellings have we been issuing since 1995. And I did some inquiry of our database. What this shows you is since 1995, we've issued 619 permits for new single-family dwellings in unincorporated areas of Story County and 379 additions to single-family dwellings. In total over that year period of 95 to 2012, and this is as of September 30th, over $100 million in investments have occurred then as a result of either single-family dwelling construction or addition. I've never really stopped to look at that. And the highest year was then for single-family dwelling construction in the year 2000. And what is kind of been interesting to note, though, in 2007 was our highest value at $14 million. In 2007, we had a couple of $750,000 or $1 million homes go in place, and that's why our valuations are that high that year.
And that's the column I'd like to see next time you do. I love this chart, but next time you do this, I'd like to see average per unit. Yeah, so just the division.
I meant to do that, but when I put the values together, I combined single-family dwelling with single-family dwelling additions, and I'd already deleted the other values,
gotcha.
So I couldn't do the average.
Yep.
I was kind of mad at myself after that one. But then that got me thinking, what does that correlate to when subdivisions were approved? And I only went back to 2000 because that's really when we started keeping them in this nice little book for subdivisions. And what this shows is the subdivisions and not agricultural plats or the minor subdivisions, are really the two-acre or two-lot subdivisions for a great extent. There are a couple in here, but... what those have been approved. So since 2000, we've created about 140 new lots. But in that same period, from 2000 to current, 416 new single-family dwellings have occurred. So we had a number of vacant lots out there that were not yet built on. We've had some above 35 acres, some farmsteads reused. What I'm going to use this for is a jumping board to see what our current vacancy rates are out there for a number of lots we have and tie that then present that in my next report. Floodplain permits, This year so far, we're at a total of 56, 51 pending, and 5 that we've finaled out. That is up this year. A lot of utilities have been included this year. And if you look at 2001, we had 26 utility permits. That's for the drainage districts. Other permits, agricultural exemptions are down this year, 29 versus 58, and I don't think we're going to reach that 58 mark by the end of the year, being that we're in October. E-911 addresses are down as well, but we had a couple of anomalies in 2011. We addressed all the trails and the mile markers, and that's why you see the new address at 77. And then in 2011, we had 25 changes. Address changes, well, we had a road renaming at that point. And then home business permits, we've issued five new home business permits thus far this year. We have one pending right now already. So you see how every year that number of renewals go up. It builds on how many we had the prior year and are still active. Code enforcement, we have a number of issues that are pending. And just as Margaret said, a lot have been pending in the pipeline for a while. Hopefully we reach some resolution here shortly. We've received complaints on construction decks at Twin Anchors Campground. I'll be working with Jessica to get a letter to that property owner and strategize what steps we can and cannot accomplish. Also, we've had a continuing issue with permits, construction without the necessary permits at Rolling Hills Mobile Home Park. Again, I think Jessica's going to be kept very busy. Home business without permit, but that has now been resolved. We, too, have been receiving complaints with the E-Free Church, the Plex, noise and parking, and I did refer the parking issue to Darren. I think he's probably coming to you for some no parking guidance signage. And I did reach out to the consultant that we had primarily been working with on the Plex and just said these complaints are going to continue. And so there needs some good neighbor efforts on your part, too, to achieve some resolution and attain what has put forth when this was originally approved. And he did say he'd speak to the others at the church, and they'd develop a plan and get back to me.
Are the noise complaints primarily coming from one place, or are we getting multiple sources of the complaints?
They're in multiple sources, but they're in very close proximity to each other.
Okay. And what are our current rules?
We don't have a noise ordinance.
Yeah.
I did a little research. I couldn't find any county in the state that had a noise ordinance for their unincorporated areas. Some of them have the engine brake ordinances, but there's no actual noise ordinances for any that I could find. I had Lucy sent out a message to her auditors on their affiliate, and through their affiliate, we got a few responses back. Some of them are having similar problems, but they haven't actually enacted an ordinance yet, so...
I'm just struggling with how the Plex is going to deal with, even with the good neighbor attitude that I'm sure they're going to have. The noise is based on activity, and I don't see the Plex reducing their activity. Now, the parking, to me, is a really real concern because that's a safety hazard. I think people are parking right there along Cameron School Road. Just not a great spot.
And what they're doing is I don't think they're parking there because the lot's full. They're parking there because it's a shorter distance for their kids to run to the soccer field if they park along the Cameron School Road. And I know that Darren sent the church an email and reminded them that initially the plan was to have ample parking on site.
Right.
You know, they need to revisit that. And if it continues, I think then we'll be forced to look at a resolution to put up some no parking signs. And then if you do that, the question arises, do we have I don't think the county currently has a no parking ordinance. And then we'll have to have Jessica do some research and see if we can if that can be enforced under the state traffic code. So I think the last thing we want to have the sheriff's office doing is out there writing parking tickets on Sunday evenings or afternoons for people that are soccer.
Well, and I'm sure that E-Free is going to want to do things the right way, both as a good neighbor and from a safety perspective. I'm just curious as to what happens if that doesn't address the issue, and where we go. So,
and I think it's going to continue because The information I've gotten is that they're probably a year or two away from actually having their worship services out there all the time. They haven't actually built their sanctuary yet, and I think that's probably within a couple of years they'll probably have that done. So it's
the way the conditional use permit was approved in phases, with parking tied to each phase rather than the ultimate build out. But there was a modification that I approved administratively to the amount of parking spaces for a temporary gravel parking last year or the year prior. And there definitely, the way it was designed, there was ample parking. And even with the maximum parking ratios we have in our ordinance because of the variety of uses out there.
I don't think they've got a gravel lot, overflow lot.
Not that it was approved, but not that I've seen that's been constructed.
I don't think there is one.
I don't know if it's
on the west
used
side.
For gravel. Is it being used for parking though? Yeah. Continuing a sign along Highway 30, will it be attempting to reach some resolution with the property owner to get a permit? It was placed without a permit. We just need to get for the Nylands Cafe along Highway 30 as you go from here in Colo. Also, the fence along Riverside Road has been addressed. We are still waiting on official submittal of a conditional use permit for the indoor sports facility along Highway 210, which exists without necessary permits. And then we may have a possible violation along Aerosmith Trail. The refrigerator that Margaret showed you earlier has some junk vehicles and some other items that we'll need to address. To date, we've issued 17 notices of violation. Done some internal office structure changes, just trying to manage now that we don't have a code enforcement officer, the responsibilities of that, those duties with existing staff too. So I districted or made territories or whatever you want to call it of our department. So the three planning positions then have different responsibilities. The blue up there are those that fall to Charlie. This primarily is upper tier, and then Franklin Township. Those in yellow are Ryan Newstrom's, and then mine are in pink. And any inquiries you have in that area, it comes to that staff member. We still have the planner on call, though. And so whomever's day that is has that, but beyond that, it goes to whoever's in that territory. Seems to be working out okay. It helps us define who's gang permits and all that as well. Our budget picture, looking ahead, this is our revenues, and I like this one a little bit better. It does show the past few years our actual revenues, other than 2008, have exceeded the budgeted revenues. 2011 was really close. In 2008, for those that are wondering, that is when the first phase of wind farm came on board. That's why our revenues were over $200,000. And this year we're right about where we should be for our revenues. And then for expenses, this again, visually you can see in the lower right-hand corner, we've consistently had our expenditures under those that were budgeted. This year's going to be really close. We're at 26.25%, and we're 24.66% of the way through the fiscal year. That increase is because we are definitely maximizing use of our temporary help with Tim as long as we can. Upcoming items, the City Services Questionnaire should be coming to you, that CPAT work session we discussed. I'll be presenting at Iowa ACE in Des Moines, that's Iowa Association Code Enforcement, and the Iowa APA Fall Conference is being hosted in Ames the end of October, and Charlie is presenting at that one. Flood Task Force work, I mentioned the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, next meeting is November 15th. Grant application was successfully filed in a very timely manner and accepted. I wish I could say it was approved, but accepted by the state. And our final written narrative for phase one was submitted and accepted. Also, we're going to put together a series of brown bag lunches. Those will start in November and go through next spring. Hold them once a month, two here. And I don't know if I mean here in this room, but two in this building, and then two in Ames. We all look at the Ames Urban Fringe and the process, the attachment A that we all love, the residential parcel subdivision, floodplain 101, and this will definitely go towards lenders and insurance agents as well as real estate agents. And then what are the requirements of the A1 zoning district? And you would be surprised a number of people that ask, well, my property is zoned residential. It may be assessed residential, but it's actually zoned A1, agricultural, and different restrictions would go with that. And we want to just reach out and explain those. With that, I have a new puppy.
I just
think this is such a great question, a great slide for any questions you may have.
What kind of puppy is that?
He is half blue heeler, half border collie.
Hi. Right.
Yes.
Name?
Molly.
Tell my wife. She'll
I
be
know.
Molly the dog. My daughter. I'll tell my daughter.
Yeah.
She'll be thrilled.
She's a Molly.
Is she? Mine is all Molly. Question for both of you. How's the office situation?
Good.
Going good? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Come up. Come up so that we have it recorded.
If you have interns expressing interest in working with Story County, would we house them across the hallway or how, you know, and then I'm interested also in having Tim continue working, and I think you wanted to have an intern also. So there's a little bit of a space crunch that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't heard of any designs on that space across the hall.
Well, I think the recorder was going to use one office for, and is she down there now using that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Part of the passport.
Instead of up here in the auditor's office.
Right. It's more private down there, and that room, I think facilities put a lock on that office door that the recorder has. And then other than that, I know Margaret's former office in that suite is now kind of a makeshift conference room.
And our files are still all there.
Your files are still there. But then so that would leave what? Two other offices?
And the common area.
Two other offices in the common area. And then
storage we have there too, yeah.
Okay, well, let's just work through all of that. But I think it's reasonable to think we might want to utilize that space for an intern or...
Or if if you want the intern in your office, and if it would be practical to move the scanning process across
the hall. Yeah. Yep.
Well, if the scanning is going to transition to health, it may be beneficial to have Tim close to the files too.
Sure. And Margaret, you and I let's talk about Tim so that maybe we can come with a proposal to the other two. Okay. Perfect. Thanks, guys. Good reports. Liaison assignments.
Up a little for this afternoon, Margaret, will you? Thanks.
Liaison assignments and committee meetings.
None for me.
Pass. Other reports. None. Public forum 2. This is for comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Is anybody who would like to address us on any topic? Seeing no one hopping up, announcements from the supervisors.
Want to wish Coach Rhodes luck in his quarterback decisions he's got to make this week. So,
pass. Ready to adjourn.
Move for adjournment.
Second, we are adjourned.